50208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Season 8. I don't know.
We're here.
We're going to sing.
We're singing the whole podcast.
Musical.
This is a musical podcast. What's up, guys?
Find me up here. Can you find me up here?
What's up, guys? This is season 8 of Film Practice.
2, 4, 6, 0, 1.
Ooh. If you're going to do that, you got to let me know and I'll turn down your mic.
I tried to go away.
But... 2, 4.
It's
okay. I started too high there. Welcome to season 8 of Film Practice. We're all here. You're all here. I'm Robbie DeShazer. With me, as always, are Carter Spilliards.
Hello.
At CA Spilliards on Twitter.
Are we doing cute nicknames for this season?
We can. What do you do?
I'm going to be Carter, There's Trouble in Town with a capital C.
Okay. So we got trouble.
Right.
With a capital
here,
C, and that rhymes with
P, and that stands for pool.
with a capital T, and that rhymes with C, and that stands for Carter Spilliards.
Yes.
Oh my god, I'm not remembering that.
We got trouble in town right here in River City.
Oh yes, we got trouble.
Right here in River City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with C, and that stands for Carter Spilliards. To his left.
Perfect.
We've got Shannon Jazz Square Widener.
That was what you got.
Everyone loves a good jazz square.
Good jazz square. Hello, everybody. So happy to be here. Love talking about musicals and jazz squares, apparently.
So low effort.
Jazz square.
I was thinking we'd work everyone's names into some lyrics.
Okay, we could do that. We don't have to stick with jazz square.
No, I like it. It's me now.
She's jazz square.
She's jazz square now.
Write it on her tombstone.
Can mine be Phoenix,
of course,
lavalier microphone?
I was going to say the ghost of river.
But
this doesn't need to stick.
No, I think not.
Here he is. The ghost of
there
river
no
Phoenix.
There are no musicals yet.
Hey, everyone.
Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes
with
P,
and that stands for Phoenix Zarola.
I'll take it.
How about
and then Robbie Grangete. We'll have two of the same reference and then two different dance moves.
I have one, but this is better.
Yeah.
This is better.
So you two are just the same Music Man reference.
And Shannon's jazz square.
Shannon's jazz square.
There's a logic to this that I don't want to disturb anymore.
And I'm Grand Jeté.
Grand Jeté. All right.
So it's the dance move where you can do a thing.
Yes, I know what a jeté is.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so it works.
Okay.
Feel free to change these next week.
It's fine.
We're
working on
going
it.
Going to.
What are you going to be?
We'll just see next week. You gotta have the audience tune in.
Yeah, look down, I guess.
Look down for next week.
When you're a... When you're a Phoenix, you're a Phoenix. From never having a cigarette because you're so fucking straight edge.
You harmonized.
There we go.
It was beautiful.
It was
gorgeous.
A thing.
If we could just harmonize all of our picks.
Oh, y'all, we need to be a barbershop quartet. That, I think, is the takeaway from this season.
Has a barbershop quartet story.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
I've never been in a barbershop quartet.
You never said that,
but now that you brought it up.
We've already talked about barbershop quartets.
Carter's
so.
Never in a barbershop quartet. What are you talking about?
Please tell your story for the adoring public.
For everyone?
Yes, it's a great story.
Okay.
All
I
want to
get it on wax. I love it.
Oh, God. So in high school, three friends and I got together, all band people, not choir people. We could all sing, and we understood pitch and notes and whatnot.
Because you were band people.
Because we were band people.
We decided
we were all fans of one William Joel.
I was going to say William Joel.
And,
yes.
And we decided for the senior year
no
talent
to his friends
show,
is Billy.
Yeah.
The close friends.
His close friends is Billy.
Confidants.
We decided senior year for the talent show that we'd get together and make a little barbershop quartet because there were four of us. We could all sing different parts. We understood music enough. We could. We're like, pshaw, singing. How hard could it be?
Did you all fit into the four different parts?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
Impressive.
However, on the performance, we did not.
I was going to say, is this not a Music Man situation where four random men off the street all fit into a perfect?
No, we had a whopping three rehearsals.
More than those guys in the Music Man.
For a five song medley.
Okay. Getting lengthy.
Y'all chose to do five songs.
Well, it wasn't five full songs. It was a medley. So the whole thing was about probably 6 or 7 minutes. Felt like an eternity.
Yes. Oh, God. I didn't realize it was that long. I thought you did like a 4-minute medley.
No, I want to say it was 5 or 6 minutes.
Great.
Oh, God.
But we stood up there and the rehearsal went great. The audition was our best performance. We like fucking knocked the socks off the audition. It was so good. We all got up there with our leather jackets and our white shirts and our slick back hair. And we start singing and our bass starts an octave high and then gets out of time trying to fix his pitch. And then it just kind of unraveled like a snowball. And then I think we were laughed off the stage. I kind of blocked it out of my memory.
Oh no. Oh,
yes.
Maybe the most embarrassing
Stan
moment.
Musical trauma.
Maybe the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Thank you for telling that story.
And then we were followed by the winning performance.
Which was
actual Billy Joel.
Billy
Joel singing a medley of Elton John.
Yeah.
So.
No, it was
lasted 13 minutes.
We had a group of band kids playing instruments like they should do. They did a little Uptown Funk. Because Uptown Funk was really hitting at the time.
Mm-hmm. So that seems right.
We had like some trumpets and guitar. Yeah.
It was probably a year after Uptown Funk, so it was like school appropriate by that time.
Yeah. It's entirely possible that your performance was so bad that it made theirs look so good.
And that's why they won first place. They won the talent show.
Well,
so they should
Uptown
thank you.
Funked you up.
I hope that makes you feel better.
You know, I try not to think about it. But here we are.
Yet you do enjoy telling that story in closed company.
I enjoy telling. Well, now it's to everyone, so it's fine.
Do with that what you will.
I just had to make you do it on a podcast. But you do enjoy telling that story when we're just with friends.
I mean, I love telling stories.
Yeah. I'm a storyteller. Every story has a good opening, a good beginning.
Not every story, but keep going.
Sure.
Every good story.
Every good story.
Has a good opening.
That's not necessarily true, as we'll find out in this episode.
Every race begins with a single step.
All this mixed metaphor to say I had a great segue for our episode this week, which is our opening songs from our opening numbers.
But not necessarily, it's first numbers.
Yes. We'll call the episode opening numbers on, like, you're reading it on your phone or whatever right now, and it says opening numbers. We're making a clarification, a little asterisk.
It is technically first numbers, as all of these films do not have, strictly speaking, opening numbers
that
you would see in the conventional sense.
So that's, to be clear, first vocal numbers, so we're not including musical overtures, or even in some cases, or in one specific case, we're not including a song that plays over the credits that does have lyrics, but is not, it's really detached from the film.
Yeah, I think when you listen, we'll go ahead and clarify when we're talking about each movie, which ones we're talking about. That way, you as an audience member don't just get confused on what the qualifications, what we're actually including. We'll make sure to be clear about that.
We can just actually, well, first of all, Carter, you want to run down a list of all of our movies?
Sure. So this season we have Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, Hairspray, The Greatest Showman, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, An American in Paris, The Music Man, Les Miserables, and West Side Story.
Nice. What do you talk?
Look down.
Okay, so now that you know all the movies, if you didn't listen to our bonus episode, do we just want to run through what all of our first song selections are, just to be clear?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Because, I mean, there's no contention on what the song actually is, and we've discussed like where these cutoffs are for most of these movies. Sweeney Todd is the song No Place Like London, which opens up the film, which is unlike the Broadway musical, which opens with the Ballad of Sweeney Todd. A shame, in my opinion, that it's not there.
I agree.
Les Miserables, we're calling it Look Down. I think we're stretching it through the majority of the prologue.
Yeah.
Up to at the end of the day, so cutting off right before the song at the end of the day.
Yeah, the whole prologue of the beginning of the film.
The Greatest Showman, this is an easy one. The Greatest Show.
Yep.
That's the song at the very beginning.
The Greatest Show.
Hairspray, Good Morning Baltimore, another pretty easy to spot opening number there. The Music Man, we're cutting off that main title opening track. Where did we land on this one? Where did we land on?
With
The Music Man?
Yeah. I feel like we landed on just Rock Island, right? Or did we want to include Iowa Stubborn?
We can talk about Iowa Stubborn. I don't know if it changes anybody's... Does it change anybody's ranking that much?
No.
Okay, so we'll talk about both because I've got notes on both.
Yeah, it deserves a mention because initially I thought we were only doing Iowa Stubborn before I listened through all of the playlist after including what's the piece before?
Rock Island.
After including Rock Island, that changed things significantly. But gotcha. Yeah, not the other way around.
Rock Island is great.
Rock Island rocks.
It's fun.
West Side Story is Jet's song with a discussion of the prologue beforehand. Really more of a looking at the prologue and the visuals on the screen as opposed to the music. I don't think we're going to get that deep into motifs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The Rocky Horror Picture Show is Damn It, Janet. I Love You. And then in America...
Very crucially not the credits song.
Yes, very crucially not Science Fiction Double Feature.
Yeah.
Crucially, is Damn It, Janet.
Yes, though we would talk about some of the stuff that leads up to Damn It, Janet beforehand.
There's not
to bring like contextual
stuff
to it.
Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, An American in Paris. We're going with the song by Strauss and kind of talking about the lead up to it.
Which has quite a...
There's quite a bit that
like
goes on before
12 minutes,
yeah.
15 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the most egregious, but you know.
We'll get there.
So, yeah. Like the majority of our previous seasons, we're doing a ranking system where everyone has their rankings, and then we have a group rank that will determine our winner and our loser for the week. I'm writing group rank on my sheet right now.
G-R-R-U-L-P-P.
You would be surprised, though. I did accidentally write G-R-R. I just double-tapped that key. Anyway... Who wants to start us off with their number one opening number? Who feels confident enough in their opener?
I do.
Okay.
Just
Take
because
it away,
this
Phoenix.
Is the only one that I feel like, I was like, this is it. This is the one. This one is
this
the best
is
one.
Quite possibly the greatest opening number. Never mind.
Speaking in Phoenix's
of,
opinion.
I'm going with The Greatest Show.
Hey!
Opener.
Go for
Surprise.
It.
Surprise. Based on your initial reaction to this movie.
Yes.
You weren't cold on it, but you were not hot on it.
Not hot on it, but I feel like it's, like, not even a hot take to say that it's probably the best part of the movie. That
it is
or the finale, which is basically a reprise of this
song. It is literally the same song.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's, I think it's really excellent. What I was judging these opening numbers on was obviously, like, the song itself, but also, like, a tone setter for the movie, a kind of like, kind of how it leads us into the story that's being told, and along with just, you know, the technical aspects of how they shoot it, how it's sung, the music, everything kind of surrounding that. But I also wanted to really focus on the tone setting itself, which I had brought up, and I think this one's really great because it really gets us. Just like immediately into like the kind of fun like fanfare that the show's kind of trying to throw. I think the music's really catchy and exciting. I think it's choreographed really well and it's really engaging and it really just takes you straight into the movie. The music is extremely catchy and and the best song.
High
in the
energy,
entire musical.
Super hype. Yep. It's the second best in my opinion, but that's a
yeah. It's and definitely like. One of the best.
Yes.
And
I think all the songs in this musical are actually very good.
And I just think, like, I don't know. It for me, it's the only real thing I truly appreciated about this movie. Not to get too bogged down in like dislikes about
not
this,
to get
but,
into film criticism yeah. on this film podcast.
But I mean, but. I almost feel like it was like it works great that it like bookmarks it because it's mm-hmm. like it starts off really strong and it gets us really engaged. It gets us into like, oh, why do we care about this character? Especially, I also really enjoy how it kind of ends with the fade out and then like the lead into how it's all yep. imaginary and he's just like looking in the window. It kind of sets up that like story beat of what our character's desires and stuff like that. So there's even like kind of like another level to this to the song and how it's not just like an engaging fun song at the beginning. There's like kind of a we learn something about the character immediately before we yeah. even, he even says anything before we even get into the story. So I think it's really good and I feel like it's the best opening number of these.
Yeah, I also have The Greatest Show at my number one. This was kind of a no-brainer for myself. The song starts before the movie even starts, which is great. I love doing all the whoa, those parts with the like studio title cards rolling by, and you've got some actually the vintage studio cards, which are really cool.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it all stops, and you've got those stomps underneath the risers, which are very cool. My only thing is that when you watch the movie, whether it's in a theater or on a television later, there is a weird little bit of like vocal mix at the beginning in which Hugh Jackman is very low in the mix and it's hard to hear him say, "Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for."
Yeah.
It sounds a lot better on the album version, which is surprising to me. But every time I watch the movie, which is, I guess this would be like my third or fourth time at this point, I saw it twice in theaters. Once by myself and once with family because it was a Christmas time movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Christmas release.
But yeah, both times, every time I've watched it since, I'm like, I know what he says, but like, I can't hear him be like, he's like, you're like, yep, okay.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it gets a lot better very quickly after that, but that's really my only gripe about it.
Yeah.
I will say, I mean, the stomps get me hyped. And I like what I wrote down was that this movie knows what you've come here to see, and rather than make you wait till the end for this big circus number, they give it to you right at the beginning and then let it go, flashback to his childhood. Or if I liked your take that it's like he's imagining what he could be.
Yeah.
But either way, it kind of takes you from this, oh, but how did we get to this? And like I kind of like that. It's not always effective in a movie. I think it works particularly well in musicals.
Yeah.
And it's pulled off very effectively in this one.
And I think you made a good point in that one thing that I forgot to mention, but it's also what I really liked about this opening number is the fact that the technical parts of it and like the editing and the cutting kind of play into the song as well.
Yeah.
Like how you said it starts with the crowd cheering and then like the foot stomping and it's like cutting to the credits on
uh-huh.
on the silent parts and stuff like that. So it's like technically getting really into the rhythm of the music and getting you really pumped up immediately. And it's like, it's really clever, the stuff they
yeah.
do. And the way they move the camera around through the arena. They're like the stage.
The tent.
Yeah, the tent.
It's a three-ring circus by the end, yeah.
The way they move around, like
yep.
the characters, the way they set up all these like choreography and they pull up. It's really, gives you this kind of like ethereal feeling that's great. And I love that it's like, right at the beginning of the movie, like you said.
And when it comes to the music aspects of it, irregardless of the technical elements, like you were saying, the editing is great. I mean, the music's really good too. It's Pasek and Paul who did the lyrics for La La Land. They did Dear Evan Hansen, which is still just a huge Broadway hit.
Yeah.
Like, there is a certain quality to all of the songs in this film that is being met. That is because it's being done by Broadway songwriters. Like,
you might even say this opening number is everything I ever want, everything I ever need,
and it's waiting right in front of me. This is who you want to
be. Yeah, it's the greatest show.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
Right, Carter,
what's your number one.
Now I'm anxious. So it's in my greatest show's in my top tier. It's my number three, and my top like three, four are all kind of like, these are all really good, kind of interchangeable. I didn't particularly have any strong feelings.
There's not a single one of these that I dislike.
Yeah,
like I was saying.
I agree
so
with that.
where I'm at with when I was coming to judge this is I was like, all right, you have to one kind of judge because the introduction. And so, you know, there's an element of musicality and choreography that you'd come with any kind of musical performance. But then also, how well is it establishing the tone, the characters, the story? You know, how well and how, you know, how effectively is this being done? And I think in all three of my top ones, it's pretty on par. But the one I thought did it the best, while maintaining everything else, and this is why we had to... I wanted to double check right before we started. My number one is West Side Story.
That's good.
And it's because I'm considering the beginning of the movie with all the kind of musical dancing and snapping and hopping around up through the Jets song.
Dance fighting, yes.
And it's because they go so long without uttering a word. And they so effectively communicate, here are the good guys, here are the bad guys, or, you know, here are the two sides. This is their conflict. This is kind of the world they live in. And then you kind of get the Jets side with, you know, the Jets song.
Yeah.
And, you know, beautiful choreography. And, I mean, I like Russ Tamblyn singing just fine.
It's not my favorite thing.
he's not perfect, but it's got a certain authenticity to it that I really liked.
Come on, Dr. Jacoby.
Yeah. But he's unparalleled in dancing, though. Oh, my God. Russ Tamblyn's a fucking legend.
That's what Twin Peaks needed more of. Was Russ Tamblyn
Russ
dancing.
Russ Tamblyn dancing, yeah.
Old Ramblin' Tamblyn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like I said, they're all pretty interchangeable in the top three. But this one, I just thought it was the most effective to me because it was able to communicate so much with so little, but still being so effective and beautiful and cinematic to watch.
Yeah.
Because obviously Greatest Show, and it kind of varies from movie to movie, because with Greatest Show, of course, it's going to be loud and in your face to tell you this is, you know, this movie's loud and in your face. But I thought this opening in particular really encapsulated kind of the feel of the movie and kind of the gravitas of it and the tone, and I thought really well.
Yeah. I won't spoil where this is on my list for me, but it's not as high as this. But that being said, I realize all of the points that you have.
Yeah.
I lose so much. I mean, there is a lot going on, and there's a lot of storytelling being done through choreography and music and stuff. But once you get to the actual, like, meat of the song, to the meat of Jet's song, there's not as much going on because so much of that is set up beforehand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you're weighing it all, I didn't dislike it, but it ended up where it is because I put things above it, not because I was like pushing it down. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I won't say where it's at either, but what I really like about the beginning, especially like the core Jet song, is that amounts for some exposition in just setting up like who the one of the main gangs is, and kind of not even just like setting up
the gang that hates Puerto Ricans.
The good guys? No.
I thought the thing was none of them were the good guys.
Yeah.
There's only one
Let's
good
go
guy.
With that.
Yes.
None of them.
And it's our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Oh. Sorry. Let me finish. There's only one good guy, and he's the big one up in heaven.
Anyway, continue, Phoenix.
Yes. Anyways. So it sets up that exposition, but even more so, like, I mean, because it's about, like, a gang in New York, you know, it can be like, you can take that so many ways. Particularly, you can take it like very seriously,
yeah,
and keep it very like dramatic and insane. And you know, what's good about that song is it's very light and playful. And then it kind of, because it's lead in by like, all the snapping and all like the dance fighting, like we get that kind of that vibe itself. Mm-hmm. We also get kind of the personalities. I like that it jumps between the different Jets in the song. So we kind of get a little bit of like character moments between these people, which I think really works really well. And I'm glad that. Yeah. It's like they've kept that in this movie version.
And to be clear, I will take anyone swinging from some horizontal poles in an alleyway or jumping off benches any day. It's fantastic. The choreo is chef's kiss.
Yeah. Mwah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It is chef's kiss all over the place. And it gets me hyped every time I watch it, every time I listen to it. There's, I mean, and the thing that I really like about the opening number is that it establishes the city as a character extremely well. And there's a handful of the opening numbers that are in contention this week that also do that to varying successes. But I really think, like, you know, when you're watching that, you know, these characters operate in New York in this world that's, you know, really clearly fleshed out and defined, you know, even going from, I'm trying to think of the character's name, but he's swinging up and down around the, that like one pole that's like randomly in between two buildings. Like there's a physicality to this space that I think is conveyed so well in the cinematic medium. Like, you know, if we're talking about transferring the musical form into something that's different. And it ranked very high on my list. It was actually my number two. But I'm extremely, extremely nervous about the rankings. But without further ado.
What's your number one?
My number one is Les Mis, actually. Okay. Which is, I know, a contentious take, but watching, rewatching, and you know, reasserting myself with this particular opening number, there is an immensity to it. There is a weight to it that I think does very well when you're taking it into the cinematic medium. I'm thinking of like the enormous first couple shots of the ship, and music conveys it really well with like the actual pulling of this, you know, enormous set of rope, I guess. It's just thick rope. And I think the music...
Thick with two C's.
Thick with yes. multiple C's.
Dumb thick rope.
I mean, I absolutely love this show just in general, and I've come around to liking it a lot more. I remember initially seeing Les Mis not being... I had just read the book, so I was very... I was in for a different experience than what I had thought I was going to get. I didn't realize... 7 years ago that it was a musical. So
as much detail on the sewers in the musical.
Exactly. There's not so much sewer detail. There's not so much Napoleon in... There's a lot that they edit out for good reason.
Zero Napoleon in the musical.
Zero Napoleon. But, okay, so my criteria...
There's 100% more Sacha Baron Cohen than there is Napoleon in this.
For better.
Agreed, yes. And it is definitely a good creative decision. But, so I was looking at lyrics and music, cinematography, how well each opening number fits the film and establishes the tone, like, overall performance and how well they establish each of the characters. And then I also added, like, overall enjoyment. You know, would I listen to these songs on repeat? Would I watch these on repeat? How well are they getting stuck in my head? That kind of thing. And, I mean, I found that Look Down really just fits a lot of those boxes. I'm not going to, like, give my reason behind. And I have a contentious opinion. I go back and forth on whether or not how passionate I am about Hugh Jackman in this role. Is he the best singer for Jean Valjean? Absolutely not. But I think that the tone of this song and what's going on and the physicality of this performance allows him some leeway to not sound amazing. Yeah. But it doesn't detract from my enjoyment. I've made my peace with his vocal ability, and this is somebody who has experience both on stage and on film. So it does not, it's not a knife to me at all, and I think it, you know, I just, when I watch, considering all of these things that I've outlined, when I watch this as the opening number, it will... It's an easy, you know, for me putting it at the top.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that last point up because I actually agree with a lot of your points, but it's in fact that last point why I have it at my number two
mm-hmm.
is because I like the beauty of the cinematography in it. I really like, the musical itself, Les Mis, is like, you know, it's bulletproof. It's like perfect in a sense.
Amazing.
So like. I see Robbie getting
it's
ready.
It's my favorite musical. Yeah. I don't like the movie. I have a lot of hard opinions.
No.
I don't think that Hugh Jackman is bad. And I say this because my first point's always that Hugh Jackman is not right vocally for Jean Valjean. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
He's not,
yeah, I can agree
not
with that
It's not that he's
as
not
well.
Correct. I always think he'd be such a better Javert vocally.
I agree.
Yeah, I think he would too.
I agree. And that's why I have it at my number two is because while I really like the spectacle of it and I really do appreciate the choreography of it and obviously the song itself sets up so much of the story. It sets up the tone really well. like just on its own and its own framework, I think I can't just, I can't give it like a, my number one, just because I do feel like the pairing of Hugh Jackman and Russell Crowe in that song, in the, you know, and Look Down, although it, you know, carries over later after Look Down.
It's but a jarring dichotomy to have to deal with.
It is a little weak. And so it does kind of, since it's the opening, like I, like later on throughout the movie, I can like get used to their voices. But at, in the opening, it does like detract me, like, oh, they're really like.
It does not make for a strong opening.
Yeah, it it kind of takes out, especially if you're familiar with like other productions of Les Mis, you don't feel the power as much from these two performers. And so it's kind of like an like it's like a sharp knife, and then like, you know, later on, you know, it'll heal and it'll get, it'll feel a little better, like once you get used to how they perform these roles. But at the beginning, it's just a little weak, which is why I have it at my number two. I think it's, you know, it's pretty great and pretty wonderful in different aspects of it, in all other aspects, other ways.
I have it at my number two, though, for a different reason. It's
Robbie.
Robbie's just over here having
Robbie's
a name.
Shirt's off.
I have this at number seven, and there's a big reason, which I'm like surprised no one's brought up.
Okay.
So I can, I'll talk about it after Carter gets
I would bring
point.
It up after, yeah.
Sound
I,
off.
I bring it at number, so here's where I'm at. I don't mind their singing.
I mean,
like Hugh Jackman. I don't even mind Russell Crowe that much. Do I realize he's the weakest of the singers in the film? Yes. But do I dislike it? Doesn't bother me. But where it kind of it brings it down a little bit for me is like Les Mis is a big musical and it's very dense. And there's a lot of things happening in it. And it kind of comes with the establishing aspect, because Les Mis, it like, yes, you have the core kind of cat and mouse between Valjean and Javert, and that's really well established, and then kind of, you know, Valjean's, if we're doing all the way up to where we said, then it's kind of his, you know, his backstory, which is
what you need
important.
To know about him.
Yeah, what you need to know about him.
Jumping into the actual.
Yeah, jumping into the actual story. But it, in terms of setting up the story to come, it's somewhat lacking. And so, which obviously it's a prologue, so it wouldn't do that. But it could have, you know, dropped hints here or there. I don't know. I don't know how they would have done it.
Les Mis is a dense musical that introduces a lot of different plot points at a lot of different times.
Yeah.
There is no song that can really sum up
that.
Les Mis.
So that was kind of where I knocked it down a little bit. But it's just, to me, it's so. The tone is so well established within a few notes that it's like, I guess we're here for this. And just the shot coming in on the ship and the water and the grime, and they're all in chains.
And like the color temperature and everything is just so.
You instantly are like, all right, this is
what. A train just hit me and I'm letting this happen.
This is where we're at. I'm going to let it wash over me for the next 2.5 hours.
Yeah. So Robbie, before you breathe fire on all of us,
this is,
I want to say, is your point about the stuff they cut in this?
No.
In the beginning? No, okay. That's not your big gripe.
There's stuff that they cut and I'm like, why'd you change that word? Why, whatever, you know. Why, you know, the retrieve the flag thing is weird, but I also understand that, like, they're trying to do a nod to the Broadway musical. They always pull down a flag from the rafters, and then the chain gang picks that up, and that's kind of their homage to that. Like, I get.
It also comes back later in the movie.
Yeah, I get what that is doing, and, you know, how it shows that Valjean is very strong, and that, you know, it plugs a few plot holes.
Yeah.
I understand some of that stuff. Guys, this is nauseatingly edited. This is so. They cross 180 lines constantly. People are not looking at their eye lines. Like, there's just. It's sloppily edited. It's disgusting, honestly. Like, it's just. It feels disjointed, especially when Javert and Valjean have their conversation together. So, aside, you know, that's my big thing. I just couldn't even watch it and be like, this is a competent job. And this was nominated for Best Picture, and it's so. Just infuriating to see that, like, something, like, it's the same way I felt watching the Bohemian Rhapsody thing last year, where you just watch them cut every few seconds, and it just feels so ridiculous. And I didn't notice it watching the movie, but I noticed it watching the clip, or watching specifically for this, and I could not, like, put this high up when we're considering everything, especially when we've got stuff like The Greatest Showman, where everything is so well edited and the technical aspects are so up to par, beyond par, that when you see something like this and when at the same time you are just getting Valjean's backstory, that like some of the same things that Carter said plot wise. When they're not there, it does a great job of establishing tone. I think the vocals are okay. They're a little bit jarring, like you said, to hear, you know, Russell Crowe kind of struggling to be commanding while still hitting notes and keeping in pitch. But when you watch that all combined with just sloppy, just a sloppy job done with something that had millions of dollars put into it, it just, I couldn't put it in, and even in my top half. So it ended up at number 7 because I think there are competent elements to it, but it's not well done.
I think for me, with the, as far as the editing goes, I think there are parts in this movie that I think are more distracting in other part, in like more distracting than in the opening. In this, I actually, in the opening, I don't find it too egregious, though I agree that, like, you know, the eye line is off in their
interpretation. Yeah,
but I think I am able to overlook it enough to where I can put it at my number 2. It's just that I do agree that throughout this movie, there are some weird editing choices. I think the editor just has some trouble.
Dutch angles that you're like, why is this a Dutch angle?
Well, because I think the editor just has issues like finding the rhythm in these songs, mm-hmm, or like, yeah, finding good beats itself. Because he's trying to cut it like kind of like a drama, but also he wants to keep like a musical kind of cut to, yeah, it. Yeah. And there are parts when it kind of is like, why are we keep cutting? Why do we keep moving around? But
and I know
I don't
some
find
of
it too bad in this opening, which is why I can still have it pretty
good. I know some of it is to probably accommodate the live vocals and those and getting good takes where,
yeah,
people sound
a,
good, as well as something
too,
where, you know, Tom Hooper would have, was it Tom Hooper?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Tom.
Yes.
Who would be like, oh, well, you know, let's give this another take and let's shoot it from this angle, or what, experimentation, but also trying to keep good musical takes in as well.
Yeah, I think that's mostly what it is.
It feels so sloppy, and I can't. Mm-hmm. When I've got other things that maybe do a better job of establishing plot, getting things rolling, and are competently done, or and look like somebody went through a film 101 class, like, I'm much more likely to put that above it. So this really didn't end up at the bottom because of like my biases against this film. I know I have them. I'm going to admit to them throughout the season as long as this stays, but like I couldn't watch this and go, this isn't a product I would turn in for an editing class. Like, this is
yeah. I mean, that's fair.
So for that it ended up much lower. Not that it matters. You all have it at number 2. So.
Well, no, Shannon's at number 1.
You have it at number 1, yeah.
So that means it's number 2?
Ends up number 2.
And then,
because Greatest Showman's at number,
number 1,
because 50% of the vote,
yeah,
was number 1.
Yeah.
Les Mis is at number 2.
And then I had West Side Story at 1. She had it at 2.
Mm-hmm. I haven't said where it's at yet. Yeah. I don't know if we can safely give it 3. But,
well,
I mean,
let's jump around and give our number 2s. Let's give everybody.
Yeah, what's yours?
So my number 2 was Les Mis.
Les Mis, yeah. What was your number 2?
My number 2 was The Music Man.
That's a good one.
Love this opening. I think it does a fantastic job of establishing the scheme that's going on, establishing the character of Harold Hill. It's very well edited, in contrast to it's the cuts between the salesman,
yeah,
and the train. Everything is on beat to that train, and you're shown that train several times to explain just how it's moving, and it speeds up, and it speeds up, and it speeds up, and it slows down, and everybody's going back and forth. It feels like a well-oiled machine. So that's Rock Island, which I think does, it's just fantastic. It, does a great job, like I said, does a great job of explaining what's going on and who Harold Hill is. It leads into his reveal on the train, which is fantastic. With that, well, boys, I think I might give Iowa a try. Who are you? Didn't get your name. He's like, don't think I gave it to you. And flips the case around and says, Professor Harold Hill. That's a great, weird, triumphant moment for a character you don't even care about yet. And you're like, I love it. If you want to get into Iowa Stubborn, he walks through the town, this does a great job of explaining the setting and giving the town as a character, which does, I mean, you really end up with, for the most part, 3 main characters in this movie, which is, you know, Professor Hill, Marion the librarian, and the entire town of River City, Iowa.
Yeah.
With its, you know.
Iowa.
Well,
you're not from.
If you're not from Iowa, you can't. Sometimes they say it, but we don't like people from the outside saying it. I just love that, showing that town and giving it, not that we'll talk about the music, but it gives you that setup for, and that's why something like trouble works so well. Like that's it sets up kind of the third character of the scene of the story. Like I say, I get but Rock Island's kind of our main focus here. I get stuff like, what do you talk? What do you talk? What do you talk? What do you talk? Stuck in my head on loop all day.
So silly.
I can imagine that being torturous.
It's fantastic, honestly. my dad will often, talking about someone, will say, but he doesn't know the territory, is a good one to always throw in there. It's a fantastic song. It sticks in your head. I think some of our best songs here are total earworms, which I will give to Look Down and Les Mis. It's got such a driving force to it that, you know.
Naturally, because of the music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I love this song. I think they do a great job of turning something that works very well on a stage and is very easy to show with a stage angle of just this wide, you know, put a train on stage and have people move to the beat that it moves on the stage, and translating it into film where you can cut and you can feel the speed of it. But yeah, I love it. So that was my number two.
I agree with a lot of your points, which is why I had it at my number three.
Oh.
I'd also like, I mean, echoing all your points, like it's an earworm of a song, and I really like how it sets up Howard Hill, the character. I also think it's kind of like underrated in the cinematography of it, because while it is just mostly in the wide, because you're just getting the whole train, I love like when it cuts to the people on the train, like from the inside, and the way they frame people. And
it's great.
How they're like, some people are sticking up and like standing on their seats, and then some people are just like kind of popping out when they're cued in for their mm-hmm. parts. It kind of gives it like a, like, you know, kind of like a theatrical feel. It makes it really like funny, kind
it's
of silly.
Got, yeah, it's got some fun stage pictures, if you'll
yeah.
let that term be applied to a movie.
A jazz square. No, it doesn't.
it's got a good grand jeté.
But where are the 76 trombones?
Yeah.
They're in the big parade. That is what I want to know.
They led the big parade.
But yeah.
With 110 cornets.
That's
close behind.
That's fine.
Too many trombones.
Honestly, doesn't know what he's talking
about. I know.
Yeah. Side note, at the very end, there's way too many, and there's like one or two snare drums and like 76 trombones.
Well, they have to do it.
It's like, I think I counted 13 lines of trombones.
But anyways, for the opener, like, I think I love songs that establish, like, especially musicals, that establish who the character is. And I also think it's always interesting when they establish who it is without having the character there, like while he shows up at the end with like the suitcase thing, which is a great joke and also adds to the silliness of it, because like it's such a comedically giant like bag and a comedically giant name on the bag.
The only funnier bag in the movie is the anvil bag.
Yes, yes. The anvil bag.
The implication that man is terrifyingly strong.
Yeah, he's so like great. A superhuman. But I just think it does a lot of great stuff to it. I think the only reason why I had it a little like bogged down at number three is that I think it is kind of it sets up the character really well, but it kind of doesn't set up like the story that much. You kind of just know that it's just a man coming to town coming on the train and then it also you know, all those characters on the train we like never really see again for the most part. So it really does a job for like a singular job. It just is to bring up how these people feel about this one character, which granted it does really well. So that's why I still have it pretty high.
And you know what he does? He's a music man.
Yeah. He's a music man. What do you talk? What do you talk?
Also, you that guy's talk, you can bicker, you can bicker, bicker, talk, you can talk.
That guy's really great. And I also just, of course, just really love how it seems to, you know, parallel the train movements itself and how it's the tempo slows and the train slows and it speeds up and the train speeds up.
I love feeling it. You can feel it start up with the cash for the merchandise. Cash for the merchandise.
Yeah, it's just really, it's a clever number. I enjoy it.
Meredith Wilson knocked it out of the park with that one. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the movie version also does as well. I love the cross-cutting to the train and like the rhythmic accuracy of everything is what I'm always constantly amazed by. In that number, and it really, like, it is a performance.
Yeah.
And it's done so well, and there is a lot of style to that opening. Not as big of a fan of Iowa City. I mean, it kind of establishes character a little bit. Like, the town is, like, you know, this group character with this group culture.
It's not as much of a character as West Side Story.
Yeah, not so much. Production design is good. I did enjoy that quite a bit. I like the guy, the first guy that he comes up to with the lady, and she's got one of the first introductions to amazing hats in this film,
so
which
many good hats.
You could write a scholastic, scholarly
next,
film
next
piece.
Episode, best hats.
Yeah. Best hats. Honestly, there's so much to go off of for the production design and
hats
the wardrobe
for in
this movie. It's, but yeah, I mean, I do like the Music Man. I have come around to the Music Man more. I like the first half of this performance much more than I like Iowa City, though. So for that reason, it was my number five, but still significantly, liked more than my 6, 7, and 8. So, yeah.
Jeez. I mean, we'll get ready for that.
Yeah.
I'll say the same about my number five.
Where are we at now?
So, what's your number? So
I said my 2 and 3.
You said your 2 and 3. My 2 was Music Man. Your 2 was Les Mis.
Yes.
Shannon's 2 was
West Side Story. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're figuring out our 3 now.
Between Music Man and West Side Story? Or
well, because West Side Story is my 1 and her 2. Mm-hmm. So I think unless y'all both have it last.
I've got West Side Story at number 5.
Okay.
I've got at 4.
So then we can put it at 3.
Put West Side Story at 3.
Yeah.
All right.
So
we've been going for 45 minutes. You guys want to take a quick break?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why
not?
Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 52.8 Media Network called Tap Heads. That's right. Tap Heads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action. And we're back.
We're back.
What do you talk? What do you talk? What do you talk?
Do you enjoy that?
You can talk. You can bicker. You can bicker, bicker, talk.
Do you enjoy that intermission?
Oh. Nice.
That is... I see what you did there.
Yeah. Anyway.
Carter. Sometimes you just pick a little, talk a little. My number 3. Pick a little, talk a little. Cheap, cheap, cheap. Talk a lot. Pick a little more.
My number 3, we already talked about quite a bit. I think I mentioned it earlier, is The Greatest Showman.
Okay, yeah.
This is the greatest show.
Oh, yeah. You said that was your number 3.
Yeah, so it's... My top 4 are very much like the top tier, and then it's like I have some middle of the pack, and then I have some lower ones.
So that's your number 3. Yeah, do you have anything to add to Greatest Showman?
Honestly, kind of The Greatest Showman to me, and this might come up more than once, is like the Netflix algorithm musical. Like, people were like, I like P.T. Barnum. I like Passing
do
Paul.
You?
Yeah, I was like, well,
no, right. Okay.
No.
Well, like, people
like
the circus.
Circus aesthetic.
Yeah, people like the circus aesthetic,
yes,
and
okay.
P.T. Barnum comes with that.
I like that Panic at the Disco music video.
Yeah, people like circus aesthetic.
Panic at the Disco did a cover of The Greatest Show, and
it's
very much
good.
In our wheelhouse.
Very good.
I didn't know that.
So you have, like, people like circus aesthetic, people like Hugh Jackman, people like La La Land, and thus... Passing Paul.
Yeah.
And
also Dear Evan Hansen.
And Dear Evan Hansen. Yeah. And it's like...
Oh, it's so good.
And then it's like, yeah, let's populate this with a cast of people
maybe.
That people like Zendaya and Zac Efron and Hugh Jackman, Michelle Williams. And it just very much to me felt like, as long as we do really, really well-cut like editing and musical numbers and all this, we can make a very fine musical. And they did. I think they made a very solid one. It's extremely entertaining.
And it was so easy to market. It was like...
Yeah.
It was like, watch all of these people you love have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But also learn a thing or two.
But it's to me, is the most, like, algorithmic musical of, like, we know people like all of these things. Let's try it and see what they think. And they were very successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard it described one time as, like, if Imagine Dragons wrote a musical.
Kind of.
Which
Now I get why I dislike it.
Yeah.
It makes me upset. But also, a lot of people like Imagine Dragons.
But now I also kind of want to see what an Imagine Dragons musical looks like.
No. There's a lot of
I just
drums.
Want a dragon musical. Yes. I don't need any imagining. Yeah. I would just prefer
I would hope that Imagine Dragons musical dragon. Has to do with dragons.
I would like a musical about dragons and a musical about the song Imagine.
Or they go off of the video, the music video for Radioactive, and you have the underground Muppet fighting.
Yes.
But that's the whole musical.
It's called Avenue Q.
I mean, yes.
We're friends.
Sure.
All right, anyways. Janet, what's your number three?
Okay, so my number three is Sweeney Todd. I actually quite enjoyed this a lot. I think it sets up the tone. I know exactly what I'm getting from this beginning. It's short. I don't think it needs to be that much longer. That's the thing. And also, so prefacing, I don't have a whole lot of background with Sweeney Todd outside of the film world, so I don't come in with a lot of knowledge of, like, how it changes from the book and, you know, what Sondheim originally intended. I, unfortunately, am not familiar with Angela Lansbury killing it, as I've been told she does in the original iteration of Sweeney Todd, but she's not in the opening, so that's not... in the film opening, so it's not quite of
so I got you
use, but yeah, everything about this I thought was done so well. Didn't mind Johnny Depp's singing performance or the guy who plays
Anthony.
The actor is in
Jamie Campbell Bower.
He's in Harry Potter as
he's Grindelwald.
Grindelwald, yeah. I didn't mind
that. And
then
Johnny Depp also Grindelwald.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's right. Okay, two Grindelwalds
and Helena Bonham
united
Carter
12
and
years before in a non-Harry Potter, Rickman.
Big Harry Potter, and
big Harry Potter cast. But none of
Ralph
this.
Ralph Fiennes plays the wig worn by Toby.
But yes, I really, really quite enjoyed this. The CGI is, you know, neither here nor there, I suppose. But I like that it contextualizes, okay, off the bat, we're in grimy, old 19th century, I believe, London. We're watching, is that historically accurate?
Nope. We looked it up the other day. It was like 1875.
It's 1785.
Oh, it's 1785. Okay, so 18th century.
Because we were making a joke about Sacha Baron Cohen's characters in this and Les Mis being related. And they were like, well, what if they're the same person and they just, you know, it starts off. Starts off in one
just
and then.
It's really Italian.
Becomes the other, becomes Italian. And then.
But he's not Italian.
Then we were
he's
like.
Not.
And everyone in Les Mis has a Cockney accent.
It's yeah, I know.
Bizarre.
It's weird.
It's like thing. Chernobyl. But we were talking about it and then I looked it up. I was like, no, Sweeney Todd takes place in 1785.
So he's Thénardier's like grandfather.
And then. And close then Les Mis is, you know, 1860s.
Based on lifespan at the time? Or
1860s,
yeah. Oh, yeah, it's kind of when you factor in...
Great-grandfather?
Ooh.
Let's go with 100
years or so.
Yeah, lifespan
so,
was
probably grandfather.
Right. Yeah, so, like, not a fan.
Same
but,
family tree.
Yeah, same family tree. But, yeah, no, it establishes distant the characters cousins. Extremely well. I mean, I love... I really do quite enjoy Sondheim. I'm no Phoenix Arola, but I do,
I'm
you know...
Stan.
It's great. I enjoy the performances. Cinematography does. I quite enjoy it. I can't speak to the.
Sorry,
I have to
thick.
Fight.
I don't know go if for just... it. Reach across the table and.
Robbie, I'm gonna need you to bleep that entire sentence.
No, just...
in post production, that cannot
I'm
go.
Not,
on.
I'm not.
What'd
gonna
you
do
say?
That. I said he can't wait till Stephen Sondheim gets canceled.
The absolute rudeness, the gall.
The funniest gall. Thing was that, like, the way you looked at the way you guys
you
both looked at
I've
each
never
other.
Seen a look of pure rage in your eyes so you, much as that moment.
Phoenix is so pure and nice that, like, the air got thick when he got mad.
It
like
was
that.
Like it was like that scene in Lord of the Rings when Gandalf starts speaking like the language of Mordor and everything turns dark in the room and you're scared.
I felt like that part in Sweeney Todd when that like music cool was like and it gets like really intense. That's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to, like, I felt his rage. I wanted to kill everybody. He hopped across the table. I wanted to kill everyone in the world.
So, spoiler alert, Carter is no longer with us.
He has been replaced.
He has been replaced.
I love Sondheim. It was just a joke.
Is that, just real quick, side note, is that what happens to our movie that leaves? Is it gets sliced in the throat and dumped by a
chair? Oh, yeah.
Its throat slit and dumped down a chute.
And dumped down a chute by a chair.
Yeah.
Yes.
And turned into meat.
Sure.
Gets meatified.
Yeah.
I do not like
that. It meets its end.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
I don't like that either. No, that was pretty much all I had to say. I quite liked it. It established the tone. This is something I would listen to on repeat. I like the lyrical complexity to it. I can, you know, go off on the, you know, the use and skill level of Stephen Sondheim, but I feel like we would probably just be preaching to the choir. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it a lot. I think it did a really good job of doing, you know, of meeting all of the criteria that I had laid out. So it was number three on my list for those reasons. I'm interested to see where it lands otherwise.
What
was your number three real quick?
The Music Man.
Music Man.
Yeah,
okay.
So what's your number? Actually, well, Robbie hasn't done his three yet.
My number three is Hairspray.
Oh,
good morning.
Yay!
From Hairspray.
Relieved. Relief is washing
based
over my body.
Fully on John Waters' cameo. No.
Sweat is now beating down
it's
my
got,
head. We'll talk about it later.
It's of my top three, it is the most earwormy. Like, it just.
Oh, yeah.
It gets,
for sure.
This thing is in my head right now.
It introduces you to the vibe and the character of Tracy, who is central to the whole movie, mm-hmm. of course. She is your main character, really. But it just does such a great job of introducing you to this kind of cartoonish, sanitized John Waters version of Baltimore that Hairspray is going to take place in. I mean, I'm always for a cheesy, like, total just, you know, showing the title, spraying it through the hairspray is just a... It's straight up, you know, it's the easiest move they could have made, but, like, there's a reason it's the easiest move you can make there. All four people sitting on top of garbage trucks and going to school. Positivity and self-love anthem, honestly. The second verse is fantastic. It's not super complex in the way of choreography, but you can feel the whole time that, like, I can't think of the actress who plays Tracy in this movie, but
Nikki
she,
Blonsky, I believe.
Yes, and she is
character actress Margot Martindale.
Margot Martindale plays every character
she
in
does.
This movie.
It's very impressive,
except for Zac Efron.
Yeah,
the poster said Margot Martindale, Zac Efron. Yeah. Sorry, it said character actress.
Esteemed character actress Margot Martindale.
Anyway, to jump back, it's you can just feel the beat and the rhythm moving through her the whole time, like. It's so impressive in a movie musical to see someone who is so in tune with what is going on the screen and what is going on, like, in the music. It just, it all feels right. It clicks in a way that feels so just awesome and wholesome and gets me pumped to watch the rest of the movie. I don't have much else to say about it, but I love it so much that I had to shoot it up there in my list. So that's my number three.
Some good
so
points.
My number four is The Music Man, which we've already talked quite a bit about. I had it there mainly because, one, I really appreciate the kind of technicality of it, and the it's very sophisticated how it all kind of layers together. And then the Iowa, you know, Iowa City
stubborn.
is like, it's fine. And it's, I think holistically as a whole, it does the job.
Yeah.
And I think it has kind of an impressive
element of choreography.
Yeah,
too.
It has an impressive technical edge to it.
Yeah.
And The Music Man, just by the nature of its music and everything kind of to the beat, is I think more technically proficient than most. So my number five was Hairspray.
Okay.
And this is kind of falling into the middle of the pack where it's like, I neither, you know, particularly, you know, loved it or hated it, or not particularly strong feelings about it. Hairspray, I think, pretty much checks all the boxes. There's nothing about it that's particularly wowing other than the song is incredibly catchy. And it does a really astounding job of kind of establishing the tone and kind of fancy-free, wonderful, whimsical world that we live in for this movie.
This movie doesn't have a tone. It's got a vibe.
It's got a vibe. It does. It does have a vibe.
And this vibe is introduced immediately.
Yeah. So it's that part where I'm kind of like, it's good. I like it. Song's good. I'm here for it. So yeah. It's kind of like I have my top three, and then my next three are all kind of on the same level. Yeah. And then my last two.
That's fair.
Shannon, what's your number four real quick?
My number four is Hairspray.
Okay.
Yes, so, checking. Yes.
I'm just trying to think of putting things down. So does that put Music Man at four, Hairspray at... Well, where do you have Hairspray? It's Phoenix.
Last.
You have it at last.
Phoenix.
I know. I didn't feel good about it.
Jeez. So I guess that puts Music Man at four.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you have it at five, right?
The Music Man? I have Music Man at five.
So that falls.
And I have it at four. And you both have it higher.
Yeah, we've got it at two and three. That definitely puts it at number four. That's a solid.
That's a four for sure.
I mean, arguably.
Well, Phoenix is fired from the show.
Because you have Hairspray at what?
Three.
Three, and I have it at five, and you have
it
at
four. I
have it
at four. So three, four, five.
Three, four, five.
Eight.
Yeah. Kind of bring it down a bit.
But I still don't necessarily know that's because we're not going to have anything that's collectively higher.
Well, have we ranked West Side Story yet? Because that's my number four.
I've got number one also.
I've got West Side Story at my number five.
One, two,
four, five.
So it wasn't ranked yet?
It was not. Oh, it's not ranked yet. No, West Side Story is number three.
Yeah, I thought it was already ranked.
Yeah. So to give you the rundown, The Greatest Showman is at number one. Les Miserables is at number two. Number three is West Side Story. Number four is The Music Man.
Okay. So it's either Hairspray next or Sweeney Todd, depending on where y'all have Sweeney Todd.
Which I have Sweeney Todd at whatever, six? Yeah, six.
Okay.
I have Sweeney Todd at number eight.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I know why you have it number eight. That's why. Mm-hmm. But I have it number five.
Sweeney Todd I find to be the most innocuous in that it quite literally does the bare minimum of everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
That I'm like, sure.
I have a hard time watching the movie and figuring out where it lines up musically with the soundtrack and stuff like that. Like, to me, it doesn't establish a whole lot of what's going on. Like Carter said, I think Carter said it great. It does the bare minimum. The cinematography is fine. There's nothing egregious about it. There's nothing really going on in the way of choreography. The plot, like I said, it really establishes that Sweeney Todd has been away from London for a while, but you don't even get that backstory till a couple songs later. You don't have the introduction of really the only, you have one major character, which is Anthony, who's also there, but you don't know his deal much.
I mean, you get, because of the way they do this, where they combine No Place Like London and the barber and his wife together, you get the entire backstory of Benjamin Barker and his wife, because that's all put into one song.
Yeah.
Okay. So you do get the flashback, and you get their story. You meet the other characters as well as Judge Turpin and them, because you see them in the flashback as well. So you get an introduction.
You get a good amount if you consider it that way. It gets broken up by. In the movie, does it get broken up by Worst Spies in London?
No. So in the movie, it combines No Place Like London and the barber and his wife together. And then the musical, like the Broadway version,
that's
separate. Because they really cut down the length of No Place Like London.
Yes. There's a lot, yeah. Sorry, I get confused because I've been listening to the original soundtrack for so long. But
right, and that's partly why I have it at five, because while I do agree with a lot of Shannon's points that I really like the music in this song and I enjoy the art, like the artistic style of it, for what it's worth, I think I really like the way Tim Burton kind of directs this. And I think, you know, the performances of it are passable for the most part. I really enjoy like the tone it starts and the tone it sets up. The only reason why I have it higher is because, it's hard for me to separate it from the stage version, which set it up way differently with the Ballad of Sweeney Todd, which I think is also really good.
It's a glaring omission, and I get Tim Burton's reasoning.
Yeah, which they do put the music in before when the credits are rolling, but they don't have the lyrics, obviously. Yeah. Or, like, we don't get his introduction, like, in that sense, which I do think is a better start. So that's why I had it ranked lower, only simply, like, for a meta-text reason that I really like the start of the original. But I still think, you know, the start of this is really good. I think it's actually smart to kind of combine The Barber and His Wife in No Place Like London because for the movie version, because it kind of condenses without losing too much and kind of speeds things along to like when the show starts itself. So I don't dislike the combination of those songs together. I think it kind of works really well. And I think it
streamlines.
Yeah, it streamlines it. And I think it just sets up a lot of stuff really well.
Yeah. I will be fair. I watched this movie 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm much more familiar with the original soundtrack.
Same.
And so when it came to talking about it, I rewatched a clip on YouTube that was called No Place Like London, which is like 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and thought, I don't need to listen to it on Spotify and hear how they did it. Clearly, it's all right here, and I know the musical.
Right, yeah.
So I was unaware that Barbara and his wife is there. Yeah. So I can make some concessions maybe in my ranking. Yeah. Not that it changes anything. I could jump it up to like 7 and say Les Mis is worse. But
I can get into why I had Hairspray at 8, though I don't know if we want to go through like 6 and 7 beforehand.
Well,
though we're kind of already bringing up.
We only have
Robbie's 2, 8 and my 8.
We only have 2 left that we haven't talked about.
Yes.
Yep.
We just talk about those.
Yeah, okay, let's just.
And then we'll kind of work out the math after that, because we clearly have pretty jumbled rankings.
Yeah. Okay.
So my number 7 was.
What's your 6?
Well, my 6 was Sweeney Todd.
You went only a 6? I haven't even said 4 yet.
What was your 4?
What's your 4?
My 4 was West Side Story.
Right. Okay.
I just was like, what? We're that far down?
Then what was your 5?
11 skip?
What's your 5?
My 5 was Sweeney Todd.
Okay.
Okay.
Which so I kind of brought up just now.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're caught up.
Yeah.
Everyone's we kind of jumped around that I was lost.
Oh, I didn't say my number 4. That's
what's your number 4?
See?
My number 4 is Damn It Janet from the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
There we go.
I fucking love this song. I think it does a great job of getting the plot rolling. It's a lot of fun. If we're going to talk about the stuff leading up to it, I mean, you've got the wedding, it's which is visually fun.
Up to it, yeah.
There's a whole song beforehand. And I want to analyze science fiction.
Yeah.
This is my way of like, commandeering the podcast.
The lips.
Just
the lips.
It's a fun time. I mean, you know, as much as people have fun, you know, calling him slut and asshole, like in the screenings and whatnot, you know, Barry Boswick and Susan Sarandon are fantastic casting choices for these characters. They do a very good job of performing this song. It's campy, but I do, if there's anything I honestly believe in this film, it is the actual relationship and the chemistry between those two, even though it's easily broken later in the film.
Yeah.
But that's because who wouldn't with Tim Curry?
Well, I mean,
it's true.
You make a fair point.
Facts. You're saying facts.
It's one of the more visually interesting. It's got some, you know, fun sight gags and stuff going on. It's got, you know, the absurdity that I do enjoy in a musical. Overall, did I say anything? I'm seeing if I wrote down anything that I haven't hit. My only thing is that I feel like if we're going to talk about real plot issues, it doesn't super get rolling till there's a light at the Frankenstein place a little bit later on in the film. But for, you know, inciting actions, it does, you know, it checks the boxes. It does a very good job of being that and a catchy song with some good performances. But
yeah, I have it 7. I'm ranked 7th, but it's really more from like a, This is kind of where it's these movies stopped checking out boxes.
Yeah.
And so, because with this one, I think it really does the tone very well of like, this is a weird song. Because, you know, it's he's talking about how much he loves her, but damn it, Janet. And it's
a rock and roll musical.
It's kind of a rock and roll musical. And it's a weird musical. It's difficult to quantify. To say the least.
Yeah.
It also kind of can work to its detriment, and I think it comes in here because I think it establishes the tone of like, this is a weird movie and this is kind of a weird song, and it does that really well. And obviously you get the characters and their relationship.
I think it works as an excellent primer for what's to
come.
It's
a good primer, but it's, to me, it falters in that there's not really anything that comes of it after. Like, it's very much kind of its own thing, and then you have the rest of the movie is all very much in its own. Like, this is like one of the more like standout songs that if you were to look at this song with all the other ones, this one is the one that doesn't really fit kind of with, because even Science Fiction Double Feature and then Frankenstein's Place and you know, all the rest of the
Time Warp's kind of thrown in there, but
yeah, that's true. But well, yeah, it's
actually, if there's one song in this whole film that like seems out of place, is
Eddie.
Eddie's Hot Patootie Bless My Soul. Because you go, wait, what?
That was just because they had Meatloaf.
It's because they had Meatloaf, but it is in the middle of another song, really.
Yeah, it's even if you count that as a song. It's more of an interjection.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one
it's
to me
got
is
got a track.
Yeah, this one to me is the first song where I was like, this is kind of lacking in kind of opening number like necessities.
Yeah.
So I don't dislike it. I love the song. It's a fantastic song. But yeah, that's why I have that one so low, is because it's kind of the first one where I was like, this does not check all the boxes.
Yeah, I have it. At
to be just real quick, okay. Fun fact: "Hot Patootie Bless My Soul" is in Meatloaf's top 10 tracks on Spotify.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
It would be a crime if it were not.
I'm actually shocked it's not number one. Who listens to Meatloaf anymore?
The only one, I mean, the only one that makes sense is "I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That." That's the only one that's...
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. So I have Dammit Janet at number 6. For some of the reasons that Carter brought up, I like the song a lot. You know, it's a banger for sure. It's fun.
Yes.
I really like the comedic choreography aspect of it. Like, I love when they move into the church and there's all the like stuff being thrown around, and they're like really overly exaggerated dance moves that are supposed to be like kind of you know, like charming, but like to a comedic level, like an unrealistic level. I do think that the reason why, and I mean, there's nothing really wrong with it. Like, I don't have any knocks with it, but I do think that in the grand scheme of things, just because of what it sets up, it's very base level. Like, all we get from this song is Janet, I love you. Brad, I love you too. And that's the entirety of the song. Granted, it's because it's their wedding, but it's all we really, all really.
It's his proposal.
Oh, you're right. It is his proposal. They come from a wedding.
They come immediately from a friend's wedding.
Yeah. But. Yeah, that's kind of all that we really get from this.
Comes
the fact
straight
that
from
the,
an asshole fight.
The main two characters love each other. There's not really more that we get set up. You can argue that we get some like character moments from them, but I don't even think it's that many character moments.
Yeah.
It's pretty base level.
Yeah.
And just them saying
it's about love to each other.
It's
a fairly shallow song.
Yeah. It's fun. It repeats
Janet
great.
A lot and Oh Brad.
And Oh Brad a lot. But that's why I have it. That's why I have it in the bottom half, I should say. It's good. It's comedic. It sets up the tone for sure. But in the end, it's just kind of just there.
Yeah, I had this at 7, and this is one of the most consistent songs I have in my fall playlist of any year. So I do quite love "Dammit Janet." It's once again, it is a banger. I will listen to it. I will karaoke with it.
It is a banger.
Everything. That being said, I definitely think
Let's go see the man who began it.
If you cut this song from the entire movie, you lose nothing.
Yeah.
If you start immediately from them driving in the car, you still have the same movie. I don't think, like, it...
I will admit, yeah, most of this beginning could be done with a narration that...
I mean, it's...
Even still,
I don't think it tonally fits... just because, like, you're, you know, awash in all of the daylight, for me that was the main thing. I mean, I guess
in my mind, it's
night the rest of the movie. Up until the ending, so that's kind of jarring. I do quite like the fact, though, that because you're in the church, you get to see some of the characters from the lab, like, come and in disguise are, like, interacting with them, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I do like the little moment where Brad, like, pulls back right before Susan Sarandon tries to kiss him, and, like, you know, it's supposed to be, like, a little quirky character moment, but on the whole, I think the work that's being done from a narrative perspective of all the other movies we have talked about has been, you know, greater on that end than it is in Dammit Janet. Unfortunately, though, I do endlessly love the Rocky Horror Picture Show and the song. It did pain me to put it where it was. I still, like, you know, from an objective standpoint, I felt like this was what it needed to be.
It happens. Sometimes it be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hard because, like, this is what was hardest for me when thinking about Rocky Horror Picture Show against, like, juxtaposed against every other film we've chosen, is that, like, it's
It is culty for a reason.
It is, exactly. Yes. It's culty for a reason. It's not it's not taking itself very seriously. It was not, taken seriously when it was made by anybody who was involved in the creative process. It definitely just came about.
Richard O'Brien.
Who's a
very odd, serious man.
What a man. But, and I don't even know how seriously he took it at sometimes. Because, like, he's like, all right, I got my guitar and I got four chords. We're going to make a musical. Yeah. But, I guess that's all you need. But yeah, it is kind of hard. Just like, we ran into this problem last season. I think we ran into this problem last season with whether or not we were going to include Scream in our ranking of kind of like how
tongue in cheek should you allow?
Yeah, how camp? Yeah. How much camp do we allow?
This is almost like an anti-musical.
Movies that take themselves seriously. So that was an interesting kind of mental framework to work out.
Till the end.
I will say that the song, I do think. For all the things that it doesn't do because of just how removed from everything it is, I do think it does have kind of a crucial presence in that I think it sets up a lot of the like the purity of the two and kind of like the sort of like innocence that they share, and that's why it's super campy
how
and light
they
and
are.
They're very square, they're very white, but.
You got a cold there?
Yeah, sorry. That was, something that I picked up.
From the Northeast or something.
That I appreciate that they have this scene because... like you said, you could start this from the car ride and, not lose a lot. But I do like that we see kind of the world outside of the house and then the world inside of it because it kind of just exaggerates and shows how... just how extreme and weird it is inside the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it does serve a purpose. Yeah. I wouldn't go so far to say it's purposeless, but it's small.
I will circle back to something Shannon said, which is that props to them for including the whole cast in that scene at different points.
Mm-hmm.
It does still maintain some of that alternative theater feel to it with we've got a cast of, 8 people, and, we got to populate a wedding. So,
we got to use them.
Tim, you got to dress as a priest real quick. And you got time.
And you're going to like it.
Yeah.
You're going to have 20 minutes after this to change into those fishnets, but you've got to be a priest right now. And, Nell, get over here. You're, going to throw rice. It does have some of that feel to it, which is a lot of fun, which, not that. It changes anything necessarily, but
it's endearing. That's the mechanics.
So what's our next number?
Our next number is 5.
So we need to come up with 5.
5.
Yes.
So what did everyone have for their number 5s?
West Side Story.
The Music Man.
Sweeney Todd.
I had Hairspray.
Okay, so the only two that haven't been put down out of those were Sweeney Todd and Hairspray.
Hairspray and Sweeney Todd are kind of even, right?
I've got Hairspray at number 3.
So you've got it at 3.
So let's just do a Hairspray check real quick.
Yeah.
I got 3. Shannon's got it at 4.
I've got it at 5.
You got it at 5. 8. You have it at 8.
Plus 4, plus 5.
And
plus
Sweeney 8. Todd, Shannon's got it at 3.
Yes.
Carter, you've got it at?
Where do you have Sweeney 6? Todd at?
5? I've got Sweeney Todd at 6.
I've got it at 5.
And I've got it at 8. 3, 5, so 6, the 7, way that looks, 3. I mean, they're kind of tied for it.
Hairspray has an edge.
Hairspray is, I think, ends
a 1-point edge.
Yeah.
Sweeney Todd ends up at 6.
Yes.
Yes.
So Hairspray and then Sweeney Todd.
At this point, I will say I'm happy. My top 3 are all staying.
Good.
My top 3 are also all staying, which is nice.
But there's only one movie we haven't talked about yet.
That's true.
Yeah, and it's my number 7. Robbie.
It's my number 6, actually.
It's my number 8.
I think it's my number 6. Yeah, it's my number... Wait, yeah. Yeah, if it's the one we haven't talked about.
Yes, so let's talk about An American in Paris. Let's talk about By Strauss.
What was your number 8?
Okay, coming in with my hot take like I did last season, I did not like The Greatest Show whatsoever. There is nothing about it that I enjoyed remotely. I was like, wow, this is an amazing advertisement music video.
Damn it.
Bye. But there, I mean.
She does not believe the hype.
I did not drink any of that Kool-Aid.
This is The Greatest Show,
Shannon.
I beg to differ.
30 shots that they take and The Other Side.
But that's my hot take.
The Greatest Showman drinking game takes place in one scene, and you take a shot every time they take a shot. And then you die.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I don't have much more to expand on that other than I just supremely did not enjoy it. The circus aesthetic, I guess, is fine.
I was wondering at the beginning, like, wow, Shannon didn't really contribute at all to the Greatest Show conversation, but whatever. I guess she didn't have any.
We shot everything. I don't know if she intentionally shot me a look, but she shot me a look. You were talking about Greatest Showman, and then I was like, it's my number one, and I just watched Shannon go.
I will say, when I did say it was The Greatest Showman, I looked, and everyone kind of did not make eye contact with me, and then someone was like, wow, and I was like, oh, God, I made a mistake.
I was more surprised about you in general.
I
was coming and going.
Maybe I'll come around to it, but I'm not
feeling... I'm going to be the only one with Greatest Show in my top three, was what I was thinking.
All right, I'm going to say my piece about An American in Paris.
Go for it, Carter.
So I put this at number 8.
Because.
And it wasn't because it's not at the beginning of the movie. Because all of the movie, like, the concept of the movie is already established by the time the song is sang.
Yes.
And so I didn't even really factor that in to my consideration of the ranking. It's what this song does. First of all, it's well sang, but there's not that much choreography to it. They're basically, I mean...
No, the choreography... No,
there's a lot of choreography in this scene. They, like, straight up dance for, like, most of the song. Like, they dance
with the
other parlor members.
Like, half of it is the musical, like, but around the piano. But yeah, no, I'm with you, Phoenix.
Comparatively to the rest of the movie.
Compared to what's to come in that movie.
It does give you a small taste.
The choreography in this song is not as impressive.
It's not a, you know, definitely not on the level of West Side Story. Yeah.
And
the choreo is fine. I said it was light on choreo.
Even compared to the other songs for opening numbers, I found it to be somewhat lacking.
I just think comparatively with the other songs, it's weird to call this one out for choreography. When, like, Sweeney Todd, they just stay on a boat.
That's true, but Sweeney Todd kind of does
Morning Baltimore, they're just going to, or she's just going to school.
Yeah, but at least there's a drum break where she shakes that ass.
Those movies do everything else much more.
I'm just saying, your first point was choreography, and it threw me off, but keep going.
Yeah. But my thing with it is, the song itself doesn't really have any bearing on anything.
Mm-mm.
The song itself doesn't really play into the story at all.
Mm-mm.
It's just kind of there.
It's a fun bonding moment between our three main gents.
Sure, but it's also like, I'm going to be friends with you before I steal your girlfriend. which to me is like...
I thought that's what our relationship was based on, Carter.
But it's like, it's...
If that's not what it is, I should stop worrying.
Yeah, when I watch it, I'm just like, this is him, like, palling around with this guy before he literally steals his girlfriend out from under him. So, it's...
I don't have much more to add moralistically from that point.
To me, doesn't really foreshadow that, because they're being friends.
When we get to episode 3 and we do Best Cuck, I mean, this one will get number 1.
That's true, it will.
So episode 2 is Best Hats. episode 3 is Best Cuck.
But to me, this song serves even less narrative purpose than Damn It, Janet, which has very little narrative purpose.
Yeah.
And this to me, 100% could have just been they sat in the bar and talked for 5 minutes and then left, and it would have been...
But it's a musical.
I know, like, it's a musical. Well, is it, though? Is it a danceicle?
Is it a visual album?
It's
kind of
danceicle
too, yes.
Sounds dangerous.
It does.
I'm sorry, sir, but you have stage 3 danceicle.
Yeah. So it's the kind of thing where it's like, it's sang perfectly fine. The song is not particularly memorable.
I think Ella Fitzgerald would care to differ. She's a really good cover of this. But anyway, continue.
I mean, from the actual, like, them singing. Sure.
Ella Fitzgerald, not a deep cut.
No.
Oh,
no.
I'm saying that version
no.
of the song.
Oh, okay.
But...
Yes.
Yeah, but regardless, I was not humming this one after I listened to it.
You're not a fan of that oom-pa-pa,
uh-huh.
in three-quarter time?
Not.
Swing it at three-quarter time.
Yeah, not really. So yeah, this was where I was like, it doesn't really serve a purpose. It's not as good as the other songs in the musical and as the other songs in this particular category. And it's That's where I was at. It checked the fewest number of boxes.
I mean, I have it at number 7, so I'm not like in hard disagreement. I would just feel like, you know, the breath, the fire breathing on me is a little extreme. It's a good song, and what? You know, it's. I think it's a good like.
I don't dislike any of these. Yeah. I just think it's easily the weakest.
What I do like about this song is I like, it's like uniqueness of like a opening song. Granted, I mean, there's a lot of like music.
It's not
before
really an
it.
Opening song though.
Right.
That's
but
the thing. It's
in,
like a,
in the terms that we're discussing, yeah. You know, like even for just like musical songs, it's pretty interesting because it's like, I agree with you that it's not really about anything, but we kind of get this kind of like bonding feeling with these people in the parlor or like coffee shop.
Cafe.
Cafe.
Like Paris cafe.
With the piano.
With the piano.
But you know, like I really like the dancing number with it. I think that the singing is maybe, you know, arguably one of the best of the ones that we have here. Like of the ones that we're judging. And I think it's like a really fun kind of whimsical feeling, and it kind of gets you into that, into what to expect in this musical, like a lot of whimsy and a lot of like carefreeness and stuff like that. Which is why I didn't bring it, like I didn't rank it number 8. Though I am with you in that, you know, there's not really any point, and it's kind of short, and it's not the most memorable of this song. And comparatively to the grandest like parts of this movie, it's pretty like small. But I don't think I think it's still pretty good.
Yeah, no, I mean like with An American in Paris, it is not my favorite song, I will say that. And it's not my favorite song from the musical whatsoever. This is not the standout piece that people keep thinking of if you're going to, like, see An American in Paris.
Right.
But, like,
there's a 17-minute ballet number
exactly,
that you're going to see.
Right. You come in knowing what you're looking for, and it's not by Strauss. I will say that. It's not by Strauss.
Or any of the dancing before this song.
But what I will say about it does, like, this is a very smart piece because it is contextualizing this really deep conversation about just art in general and like the discourse between like taste and the idea of like jazz not being as like readily accepted, being too Americanized. You're in Europe, so automatically, you know, there is this bias toward whatever kind of culture is being created on the continent. You're seeing that both coming together from these two different sides. I mean,
jazz is too stodgy.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, like, this is all coming from Gershwin, who's like one of the most prolific American composers of the 20th yeah. century and of, you know, of musical history, whether you like him or not. I know some people have some pretty anti Gershwin opinions.
Hot Gershwin takes.
Yes, they're, believe it or not.
Sentiment.
Just wait till a follow-up episode on composer fracas.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Hasek and Paul versus Gershwin.
But, no, they're like, it's
Beethoven
not...
Beethoven was a hack. There
it's
I
not
said.
Serving any direct narrative. Like, we're not learning anything deeper about, you know, Gene Kelly being another iteration of an awesome, you know, not ethically, but like, you know, a Gene Kelly kind of character. He's
a
definitely
Gene
playing
Kelly
himself. Like, we're not moving forward in any kind of rich, you know, subversion of what's going on in this narrative. But, like, I'm okay with that. I think it's still smart. It's quite enjoyable. It's making the city a character once again in this microcosm of the cafe setting, which is really important in Paris as a whole.
Parisian culture.
Thank you. Like, there's nothing about it that is glaring, like, that I hate or detest. I mean, hate or detest. I don't think anybody dislikes anything we've chosen. So,
except The Greatest Show from Shannon, but
apparently.
I
because
anyway.
My thing with that is all of those things were already well established by the time this song comes along. So it's like Paris as a character is already well established at the point that we get to this music.
I do like Shannon's reading though of like the conversation kind of being a big talking point because the musical's called An American in Paris, and so I think that like I didn't read it that way, but I think it's smart
it's
in that
yeah.
like it is it does kind of set up the like the cultural difference of an American and the people in Europe and like how they feel artistically and how they would differ and like how an American would differ. So I think that is like that's
Shannon,
a smart point
to make. To which I will counter, The Greatest Showman is about The Greatest Showman. So therefore seeing him in The Greatest Show.
It's great in the title, Shannon. How did you miss
that? How did I miss that really glaring piece of coffee? No.
I am going to...
Tells us straight out there.
I am going to start getting our discourse. We're already going about 45 minutes.
All right. Well,
so let's...
What do we have left to rank?
We got two movies left. We got the Rocky Horror Picture Show and An American in Paris.
All right. Where did y'all have Rocky Horror?
I had it at number 4.
All right. I had it at 6.
4 plus 6 plus 7. All right. That's... Okay. And then I had American in Paris at 8 plus...
I had 6.
6.
7.
7.
6.
6. So, yes, by a hair... It's Rocky Horror Picture Show at number 7, and then American in Paris at number 8, because they average out to a 6, and then a 6.75.
Yeah. Unless anyone has any want to try and sway the other way. But
here's the thing.
Both of these feel the most out of left field and the least connected to what's going on.
Yeah, they're definitely the toughest ones.
I feel a tremendous amount of guilt voting out perhaps the greatest cinematic musical of all time.
It's in the top 10.
Yeah. But who's counting?
Widely considered the greatest musical ever made.
Yeah.
Is it?
Movie musical.
Movie musical.
Yeah.
Singing in the Rain?
It's up there, but...
It is up there.
Most like, critics.
Yes.
Like cinema.
I know.
Are like...
It's the greatest. It's the American Film Institute number 9, I think is what it is.
It's no Into the Woods, but you know, it's good.
Not a Mary Poppins Returns.
It's no Cats. But
Cats.
Hey, we can't say for sure about Cats.
That's true.
Yet.
Cats could be great. Cats is
could
amazing.
Be, it's going to be a transcendental experience. I know that.
See it live.
I'm already meditating.
I do. I will say that, like,
it's going to open my third eye.
I think the new season episode ones are always a bit of a bummer because we just think of like all the stuff that we couldn't have said about this movie.
It's
I was
true.
Thinking about this earlier. That,
I've
like,
always felt that way though.
Yeah, like
Ever since La La Land, I've been like, there was so much I wanted to talk about with this movie.
Because when we pick these movies, we're like, oh, there's a lot of good things to talk about with each one, and then it's always the first one. It's like, man, we just kind of like shat on it and it's out, but. That's just kind of...
What are you going to do? Somebody has to be first, and that's
I'm sorry, in American in Paris.
Yeah, there tends to be an outlier every first episode, and unfortunately, we have to cater to kind of the greater of the bunch than tailor a category for one that doesn't quite fit in.
Yeah. And American in Paris just, you know, gets its throat slit and sent down to the basement, and then gets grinded into meat.
Being meatified.
Wow. This great
by
critique
Gene
of art
Kelly.
That poor Dan and
poor Gene Kelly. I'm just imagining the blood splattering over the nice white outfit.
And like, oh no.
Oh.
Well.
Smile on his face.
Yeah.
He's just so happy.
Yeah.
And is he killed by Johnny Depp specifically?
No.
Or
I think by the four of us.
It's
we
the
did
four
this.
Of us.
Oh,
all collectively holding the razor.
Yes. Well, You three are holding a razor. I am hidden, actually, in the trunk in the corner.
peering out, ready
to be killed next.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever makes you happy.
But yeah, that's the show.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'll give you the group rank real quick. Our number one and our winner for best opening number is The Greatest Showman.
Much to Shannon's chagrin.
Which... If we had known that it might actually be Les Mis if we had known
that this
that's
was
true.
Number 8.
If this was your number 8, this could have dropped down
significantly.
Under Les Mis.
Oh, yeah. I guess it could have, but...
But it's set in stone.
Yeah.
There's nothing
we can do anymore.
What
it's solidified
could've.
And fossilized.
We already hammered it down.
No, we can't change
I
it now.
I can't hit backspace on this computer, Shannon.
We've spent too long. No.
The Greatest Showman at number 1, number 2, Les Miserables, number 3, West Side Story, number 4, The Music Man, number 5, Hairspray, number 6, Sweeney Todd, number 7, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, and number 8, and going home this week, is An American in Paris.
No longer in Paris.
Now in hell.
Now
apparently.
In
hell. Apparently. Ground into meat pies.
Jeez.
Anyway, all movies that die go to hell, just
ending.
To be clear.
Anyway, you can find me... on Twitter at CA Spillers, like spill something you're on an S. I tweet now.
Is this 9 episodes in a row now?
I don't know. I still haven't gotten any more followers, so until that happens.
Just keep
guys, we're gonna have to make ghost accounts to get them to stop.
It's fine. I'll take them. I'm recommending this week, I don't know if y'all heard, but last Tuesday, a little streaming service called
Apple TV.
No, that was
last
week and a half ago?
Couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Almost 3 weeks now. A little service called Disney Plus dropped.
Disney Plus.
Much anticipated.
I've heard of it.
What?
I've heard of it.
You've heard of it? Yeah, I've heard tell.
I thought you said anyway, part of it.
My recommendation is one of their two narrative shows, narrative original programs. High School Musical, the musical, the series. No, not really. It's The Mandalorian. It's,
What a ride.
No, it's The Mandalorian. If you love Star Wars like I do, and man, I love Star Wars arguably too much, this show should be for you. It's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it. It's so far...
How much do you love Star Wars, Carter?
Too much.
Where would you rank The Last Jedi in your 100 films of the decade?
We don't need to talk about that right now. Robbie?
Sorry, we'll do a New Year's episode where
yes,
we talk about
yes, we're not it? Talking about that right now. It also is subject to change. We have another Star Wars movie coming out.
That is a good point.
You're right,
Robbie.
You can't argue with that logic.
It's before the end of the decade.
Okay.
Anywho, Mandalorian, great. Two episodes out. Both of them under 40 minutes, which is interesting. They're both really well edited, I think. It's just a very pleasant show. If you've seen the memes, there's
a
certain child character that is maybe the most adorable thing I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, go watch it if you have Disney Plus, or get the free trial. It's free. Go watch it.
Go subscribe. Go get a Verizon wireless line.
Yeah. Get a free year.
Free year.
I already bought the 3 years like ahead of time.
So do you just have a free Verizon account
that's
to give
my,
out?
That's my question, though, because I have Verizon, and I already paid for 3 years. So my question is, can I add a fourth year? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
So whoever, the next person to follow Carter on Twitter gets his free Verizon account.
If I knew how to do that, sure.
You can find me on Twitter at Robbie DeShazer. Go listen to my other podcast, Tapheads. Go follow me all over the place. And if you live in the Austin area, come see me do some improv. If you're listening to this the morning it comes out, there's a 7 p.m. show at Cold Town Theater that will be a lot of fun. So come out to that. Other than that, my recommendation this week is actually going to be another podcast. After you listen to every single episode of Film Fracas and every single episode of Tapheads, go check out Podcast The Ride on I can't remember the podcast network. It's a lot of fun. If you're like me, if you're like any of us, there's probably a chance that you have some weird Disney Parks knowledge floating around in there. And if you want to hear three guys really geek out about that kind of stuff, it's a lot of fun. So go check out Podcast The Ride after, which I'm sure there's probably some crossover in our audiences already. So go check that out.
One thing. You can find me at BombSPhoenix on Twitter. I hope to tweet things that you like. For my recommendation, before I get to that, actually, between the seasons, I actually helped my friend Jacob and my other friends from the band Porch Dream to make a music video, and it's out on YouTube right now if you guys want to take a look at it. The song's called Always Better. Thank you, Carter. It's called Always Better by Porch Dream. It's a great music video. My friend Jacob and I had a lot of fun making it, and the song's really great as well, so if you enjoy it, check out Porch Dream as well. As far as movie recommendations, Carter and I today were actually fortunate enough to see an advanced screening of Dark Waters. And I'm going to recommend that,
Todd Haynes film.
Yeah, it's a very solid flick. I'm not going to give too much away, but it
makes you feel gross.
You feel gross. You hate corporations cause they're the bane of our existence and going to kill us all. And that movie definitely promotes that point very well. Mark Ruffalo has a good performance in it. So check that out. It should be out by the time this podcast is out.
Yeah,
so
today.
You could hear the end of this.
At your local cinema.
Buy a ticket and then go.
Go see it.
Yeah.
Or you could see Frozen 2. Both open the same day.
Yeah, but it depends on what the moods you're interested in.
Two very different moods, I'll tell
you
that.
Do you like corporations or do you hate corporations?
That's honestly what it is.
There are only two kinds of movies.
Yes.
That's it. Yo, guys. You can follow me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5. I review things and that's it. That's all I use my Letterboxd account for.
That's good. That's the intended purpose.
That's the intense. That's
like, really why I use my Letterboxd account to
to only like
organized
really obscure
protests.
I use my letterbox to send letters. Is that not what,
is that what it's for?
I use mine to get dates. Sorry, nerds.
And then I also
Phoenix is seeing Greta Gerwig this Saturday.
Don't tell Noah.
What? Oh, and you can also head over to 90films.co. I just added a new review of the Australian film Undertow, which is something. So, yeah, let me know what you think. It's fun to keep writing regularly. So, yeah. This week I'm going to be recommending Dairy Girls on Netflix. It is a rip-roaring good time, and I only have to use the subtitles of every now and again because the Northern Irish accents are so thick. But it's light, it's pleasant, it's 20 minutes, 25-ish minutes an episode, about a group of high school girls growing up in Northern Ireland in the 1990s, along with their one English friend slash cousin who they shit on a lot because he's English. I imagine there's more cultural significance there than we would be able to glean in the U.S., but it's very funny.
Shannon, just imagine how we talk about Oklahoma.
There we go. There we go. Yeah, so it's great, though. It's quite enjoyable, and for somebody who doesn't watch nearly as much television as she probably could, it's fun. So, yes.
All right, this has been the first episode of Season 8 of Film Fracas. We've already gone on way too long, and if you're listening at this point, you don't have to anymore.
Why?
But if you are, follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Film Fracas. And we'll be back next time with another fantastic brand new episode of Film Fracas.
Bye-bye.
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 Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Stilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. Media.